Hello, I'm Professor Lou. Welcome to our live stream. Today, I'm going to be talking about ways that teachers who are teaching remotely can get to know their students online. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof, critiques and tutorials. One of the reasons I wanted to tackle this topic is that I think out of all of the parts of remote learning that teachers are having to adjust to, this one, I think in some ways, is the biggest leap. Because let's face it, students, we don't speak the same language when it comes to socializing, at least those of us who are over the age of 40. We tend to see the world a little bit differently than you guys. And I have definitely figured out a lot of things over the past few years working with high school students and also college students at the college level and classes and all that. And I want to share a couple of secrets with you guys who are teaching remotely. And those of you who are college students, who are high school students, let's give the teachers the secrets behind communicating with you guys socially. The first thing that I want to talk about is no matter what you guys are teaching, whatever level, you have to have some type of group chat platform. This is really necessary because the thing is, when you're teaching remotely, so much more has to happen online and email is not going to cut it. My personal recommendation is Discord. I also know that many school systems are requiring their teachers to use a particular platform. So whatever platform you guys are using, the tips I'm going to give you during the stream are still going to be applicable. But this is my personal recommendation if you are able to choose a platform. And I do have this stream, which walks through all of the features of Discord that will show you how to set it up for the classroom in case some of you guys are interested in doing that. And we also have a Discord server template, which will save you many, many hours of having to set up your Discord server from scratch. Now, ideally, the best case scenario for remote learning is if you can make the time to have live one-on-one calls with each of your students on a regular basis, that's ideal. Now, the problem with this, though, is that I know a lot of teachers could have anywhere from 40 to 80 students in a single semester if you're teaching multiple classes. So this is not always the most viable option for a lot of teachers. It really, really depends on your numbers. But I would say if you can manage it, try to have a one-on-one call with each of your students, I would say at least once a month. If you can only do one one-on-one call with each student during the semester, like just one call for the whole semester, that's still better than nothing, okay? It's not ideal. But if you can, these one-on-one calls are so important for fostering a close connection. Because what I have found is that even when I was in the brick and mortar classroom, having one-on-one conversations, it's so important because oftentimes if you're talking to a student in the middle of the classroom and everybody's able to hear what you're saying, of course, there's stuff you probably don't want to say in front of the whole class. And I just have found that students feel a lot more comfortable to say whatever they're thinking when they're talking to you one-on-one. And so you're able, I think, as a teacher, to gain a lot more insight into what a student is really needing. So I would just say anytime you guys possibly can, really, really important to have these one-on-one calls. And these one-on-one calls, they don't even need to have an agenda, okay? Like, honestly, it's a check-in. You can describe it like that to the students. You don't have to say, oh, we're gonna review your work. You can just say to them, listen, I think it's really great for us to have these ongoing one-on-one calls so I can check in, I can see how things are going. And honestly, these one-on-one calls, they don't have to be that academic. They can just be time that you spend getting to know each other, because actually that is the part of remote learning that I think for a lot of teachers, honestly, it's really heartbreaking, because those little conversations that I used to have with students during break or when we were just mulling around before class or after class, that's gone online. And so as teachers, I think we really have to take more than extra initiative to find circumstances where we can actually set up a place to really get to know each other. So it's really, really tricky. If you can, try to do this. I know it's really hard when you've got so many students, it's overwhelming, and obviously your time is limited as a teacher, but I've had just profound conversations with students one-on-one, so try to do this when you can. And depending on what platform you're using, if you're using Discord, we have voice channels, which is basically Zoom inside Discord. And I know people have very different ideas about, oh, should we be on video? Should the student be on audio? I would just say for the very first one-on-one call, you should both be on video, just so you make that connection. Because if you never, ever see the student's face, that's not a good thing. But I would say after that first meeting, if the student decides that they would just much rather be on audio, I think that's cool too, because I'm not really a big pusher of forcing students to be on camera, because I know for a lot of people, it's just really uncomfortable. But I would say for the first meeting when you've never met before, that's actually pretty important. Another thing that I highly recommend all teachers do, if you can, again, because everybody's circumstance is totally different, have weekly office hours. So every single week, let's say Tuesdays from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you just tell the students, okay, I'm going to be in the Discord voice channel, and it's drop-in, one-on-one meetings, okay? And so therefore, it's like the students know you're there. I feel like a lot of this, and students, you guys can tell me if this is true. I think that students want the security of knowing that their teachers are available. So even if a student never drops into weekly office hours, the fact that they know it's there, I think is of comfort for a lot of students. Correct me if I'm wrong. Those of you guys who are students, definitely you guys are here to let me know if I'm giving out inaccurate information. But these drop-in calls, I think, are really handy, because honestly, I did a lot of these last semester when I was teaching at RISD, and they just have a casual tone that I think doesn't feel so formal. And usually what I tend to do during these office hour sessions is I will be on video the whole time. And then I say to the student, you can pick whatever you want. If you want to just do audio, that's fine. If you want to just do video, that's fine as well. Neil is saying in the chat, I don't have many problems interacting with academics, but I rarely have casual personal talks. Not everybody's comfortable with that, okay? I definitely have worked with students who really just only want to talk to me about academics, and that's fine. I just know, though, that as a teacher, the more you can have a personal connection with a student, that there's a certain degree of trust that starts to happen, which I think does enable the student to learn a little bit more fluidly. Now, obviously, you're not going to see eye to eye with every single teacher. There are going to be some teachers you just don't relate to, and that's okay. There's also going to be some teachers who you just naturally feel that they understand you better, and that's fine, okay? I just think that in general, though, that should really be the aim. Ra Nuck is saying, I cry. I literally cried when it came to personal stuff. You know what? I think that's okay, guys. Because you know what? When I was at RISD, I was the crying teacher. I was the person that everybody would bawl their eyes out to in the hallway. And I have to say, I had like tears radar. Like I could always tell when somebody was on the verge, and I would sort of whisk them out into the hallway so that way they wouldn't have to do it in such a public setting. But you know what, you guys? I think that it's okay for you in these one-on-one calls to tell teachers you're struggling, to tell them that maybe remote learning isn't the best thing for you. Because here's the thing, students, okay? we don't read minds, okay? Like, I really, really wish I did. That would be kind of awesome. It would make my life a lot easier. And so while it is up to you, students, what you want to tell your teacher, I mean, you shouldn't say anything you're not comfortable with, it does really help a lot from the teacher point of view when you tell us what's going on. Because what's harder is when it becomes a guessing game and I have to wonder what's going on. And I have had students in the past who just could not tell me anything. And that's okay. I mean, that's the way things are for them. But it does really help when you guys tell us what's going on so we don't feel that things are random or totally out of the blue. Okay. Now, what I do recommend if you want to have these weekly drop-in office hours, okay, remotely, it does get a little bit confusing because brick and mortar classroom, you just knock on the door. That's pretty easy, okay? But what I usually do in Discord is I will actually have a text channel, which is called a waiting room. So I just tell the students, okay, if you want to come see me for office hours, the first thing you have to do is enter the quote waiting room and send me a message and say, hey, it's Sarah. I'd like to have a session with you. So that way I know that they're there. Because the thing is, if you have a voice channel where you hold office hours and you're having a conversation with a student, you don't want another student to just enter the voice channel and have the other student not know that somebody's just going to walk into the middle of their session. So the waiting room is really important. So that way nobody's stumbling in on somebody else's private conversation. So definitely there's got to be some way that the student can notify you that they are there and ready to go. And then when you're finished with the other student, you can go into the waiting room and say, oh, okay, Sarah, now I'm ready for you to come into the voice channel. So this is very important to do. Kevin is saying, I had the same art teacher for over 5 years. In some years, I was her favorite in the class. In other years, she absolutely just hated my guts. You know what, Kevin? I know it can feel that way. And I definitely have students saying to me all the time, oh, Mrs. Smith, she hates me. I'm sorry to burst her bubble, you guys. We just don't have the energy for that. I know it can feel that way, but whatever amount of hatred or emotion you feel that your teachers may be exerting, it's probably not remotely as much. Because I think when I was younger, I used to get more emotional about student reactions. And then after you've taught for a little while, you just realize that you can't carry that around with you all day. And when I would come home from teaching, I would just turn it off. So if you think your teacher hates you, guys, it's not the same thing as being mildly annoyed, okay? That's probably more what it is. I don't think it's about people really hating your guts as a teacher. And so what you do, you're in the voice channel, and then you type to the student, okay, time to come into the voice channel, and then it's very easy and clear. And then the other thing is I always have another text channel. You can call it office hours because let's say a student has office hours and they have a drawing they want me to look at. That way they can post the drawing into that text channel and I can look at it while I'm still in the voice channel. That's how it works in Discord. I mean, it depends on what group platform you guys are using, but it is a little bit tricky to do these office hours because you have students coming and going. You want to make sure that it's organized. Here's another thing, teachers. I know this is going to sound really silly, but there is a real power in emojis when it comes to communicating with students. And students, you guys can tell me if I'm just an old fart and I'm so off, or if you think this is true, okay? Because this is what I have gotten talking from students, but I'm always happy to hear another point of view. So if you are a student and you're in the chat and you're like, Clara, no, you are off, please tell me because I want to know if I'm like way off and giving bad advice to teachers. Hopefully I'm not doing that, okay? The thing about trying to get to know your students online, you can't be 100% business, okay? Because if you do, I think that remote learning, more so than brick and mortar, can quickly transform into a very cold experience. And you don't want that to be the case. You want to form a lasting connection with your students. And emojis really are a language in themselves. I mean, I text sometimes with my daughter And I mean, I feel like most of the time, over 50% of the text message is emojis, if that. Sometimes it's even more than that. And so teachers, if you're not used to using emojis, you better start because they're really handy and they're fun. I mean, who doesn't like pretty little pictures that are super cute with colors on them? They're really, really cool. Yeah. And so Neil is saying emojis are just fun. And very good comment, Blue Wolf Spirit. So wise. Learn what the emojis mean and symbolize because you could inadvertently offend or confuse them. Yep. There are certain emojis you guys might want to stay clear of, like the peach means a butt. You guys can figure out on your own what an eggplant means. So yeah, do your research and make sure that you aren't accidentally using the wrong one because you could definitely get in trouble. And Rod Nook is saying emojis are the best. Sometimes all you need is just one emoji. Absolutely. So if you're not used to this, guys, definitely get on top of that because it's fun to put in all these little pictures. And another thing you guys can do, let's say, for example, you're using Discord as your group chat. I didn't even think about this. This is what one of my students told me. They said that if you put emojis in the name of the channels, it makes it, number one, easier to find the channel that you're looking for. And it's just cute. It's like way more fun to have these pictures in the group spaces. So emojis are not just for messages. You can use them in other places. I mean, why do you guys think I have emojis in my slideshows? Okay. Because they're cute, they're fun, and they make people pay attention in a way that just a bunch of words on the screen does not. For example, if you're writing a really quick phrase, you did a great job with this drawing, and you add a little fire emoji, that's usually like saying, wow, you're doing a great job. Or if you want to say, wow, this is so wonderful. So there is, to a certain degree, more of a casualness in terms of communication online. But teachers, this is an ongoing conflict for us that we want to be serious when we need to be. But we also have to be willing to lighten up a little bit. It's hard though, okay? Students, from a teacher point of view, it can get a little bit dicey because you don't want to be too silly in a situation that doesn't really call for that. And you also don't want to be like so serious all the time that nobody ever wants to talk to you. So it's definitely a really delicate balance that is really, really hard to do. I think another thing, teachers, that you should really consider doing is ongoing motivational posts, okay? This is something that I generally don't do when I'm teaching brick and mortar because I really don't communicate with students that much online if I'm seeing them in the classroom, okay? But the thing is, I think to keep in mind, teachers, that students are struggling too. I think we all are, okay? Given the global pandemic, I don't think there's any teacher or student who is not having some degree of struggle, okay? But I do think that the students need that extra boost. I think that they need to be reminded, hey guys, good job, nice work. I know you guys are trying. I just want to recognize that I see you guys putting in the effort. I see you really investing the time. They need to hear this, okay? And sometimes I think people might think, oh, but I don't want to just do that just to do that. They should only hear it when they actually are doing an amazing job. And yeah, they're not always gonna hit it out of the park all the time, but you have to keep motivating them. I would say at least a few times a week, you gotta have at least some post somewhere in your group chat that says, hey guys, keep going, keep doing it. I am seeing you, I support you. They need all that extra stuff. Really, really important. And here's another thing that honestly, even maybe a year ago, I totally would have scoffed at this advice. It's that every comment you guys send to a student, it all matters. Even when the comment is one emoji, even when the comment is one word or two words, it matters, you guys. Like, I never really thought that me saying good job would actually matter on something that a student got online, but it really does. It's sort of like what we were talking about in a previous stream, how a lot of people in their online activities, they want to be seen, okay? So you don't have to write a big, long paragraph to somebody online, for it to have impact. And I literally had students say to me, listen, sometimes the difference between whether I decide to keep going forward or not is one comment from somebody. Like if I post this thing on Instagram and it's crickets, nobody says a thing, that really bums me out. But when I have one person that comes in and says, hey, good job, that perks me up. It wants me to keep going. Okay. Now, in theory, I think we should all be trying to boost ourselves up, but you can't always do that. You need the support. And so literally, you guys, as teachers, when we write things like, yay, party emoji, I think that matters. I also think it matters when you just say to somebody, keep going. Does not have to be long, you guys. This is really, really important. Okay. Yeah. Like Lisa is saying here, pep talk at work is nice too. And Neil is saying, I had one teacher who just plays random motivational videos to cheer us. It feels lazy and impersonal. Yeah, I would not recommend that because it's not coming from you. Like, I know if I were a student, I would much rather get one of these messages from the teacher than have some silly video being played because it's not coming from the teacher. It doesn't feel that genuine. It has to have something happen. Or if you guys want to sympathize, like if you just want to say, that's a bummer, I'm sorry that happened to you, right? I know this makes teaching more work, but you know what, you guys, these are small actions that you can take as teachers that from what I have seen have really big impact, okay? And so if I have to pick between putting out 30 short comments that are gonna keep people going versus two comments that are like really well written and really long, like that's not very big impact because it's only gonna impact two people versus 30 people. So I think that's really important. Yuko is asking, do you create Instagram accounts for your classes, ask students to post and then comment? I did try Instagram last spring, but I found it was too limited and the visibility was not very good. It was actually hard for the students to see what everybody else was doing. And so my recommendation now to post work and get comments is to do it on Discord. I think that that's a lot better. Yeah, like Tom G is saying here, I love all the comments in Discord. And sometimes the comments are not long, but it's like they really have meaning. And so I really feel like a long time ago when I was scoffing at these short comments, I used to think, oh, that's so shallow. It's just one word. From what I've seen interacting with students online, it's not just one word. It actually is that little boost that could be the difference between somebody giving up and to keep going on. Keaton says, my old art teacher made a lot of snarky comments, but when someone showed him a scribble, she was really nice. Well, I don't know the context of that teacher. I know that sometimes it can definitely feel that way. And it's tricky. I mean, none of what I'm talking about here is easy to pull off by any means. I mean, everything I'm talking about is general advice, but actually getting the results that you want, that's another story. It's like actually applying it to your context. That's what is really, really good. So like here, Blue Will Spirit is saying, I love it when Professor Lou tells me good shading, even though my drawing's not that good. It's encouraging. You can always find something good in all work, even if it's just effort. Yep, that little extra thing goes a really long way. And also Ron Nook is saying, comments make you feel validated, like you're being heard. Yep, people really, really need to feel that someone's listening to them because online it does feel like a big black hole sometimes and you don't want your class to be perceived as a big black hole. Okay, so I would also say in whatever group platform you're using, it's really good to have a social channel, okay? Now the social channel can be a little bit tricky though because it's so broad that it really can invite anything, which is fine. But I think sometimes when you have channels that are so broad like that, it's easy for things to just feel so random and scattered that people sometimes have trouble, number one, figuring out what to post because it's not always so obvious. And number two, having any connection is tougher because the subject is so broad. So let me give you guys a couple of examples as a teacher, how maybe you can stimulate the social channel in a way that's gonna really build community. Because really, you guys, that's what you're here to do as a teacher. Your class, it really is a community. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. Like, actually, I actually am going to be giving a lecture in, I think, in October. It's at a library, and it's about how to start a YouTube channel. Okay. And I think a lot of people would assume, oh, well, that's going to go over all these technical things and how to get started. And yes, I am going to cover that. But you know what? The underlying concept that I'm going to push for that lecture is that when you start a YouTube channel, and same thing when you teach a class, you're really building community. That is much more important than subscribers, than numbers, than when you upload, like all that other cosmetic stuff. It does make a difference, but you have to have the mindset that you're building a place for people to connect, community. And if you lose sight of that and you get sucked into all these technical things, it's not going to succeed. Okay. So teachers, think about it that way. That's how I see ArtProf. I always say to myself, ArtProf is a community first and foremost. YouTube is just the means of delivery. It's just how we put our content out there. But fundamentally, it's absolutely a community. We have a question from Yuko. They are saying, would you not recommend using both Discord and Instagram? Would that drive me crazy? Thinking about using Discord for real critique and Insta for students to have fun and feel connected and proud. I would pick Discord. I think having both is going to split up the class too much, and it's going to be hard for people to know where to post what. And so I would just say one place. Like, one of the things that I have been telling teachers to do is, if you can remove one platform, get rid of it, because there's no reason to add an extra platform unless you absolutely need it. In my opinion, Discord takes care of what you would do on Instagram, so it's totally fine. So here's a way to stimulate the social channel. Somebody suggested this to me. Actually, I got a lot of these comments from students and teachers. And you guys know they have all those like weird holidays where they're like, today's Pirate Day. It's Hamburger Day. Like, all these like weird holidays. You guys can look them up. Chances are someday is some silly holiday. And so you can jump in and say, guys, it's National Cupcake Day. Who likes cupcakes? Something like that. People tend to like things that feel current and timely and that respond to what's happening that day. And this is such an easy question. So the thing is, in the social channel, this is not the place to have existential conversations, okay? Like, this is the place you just get the conversation going. And you guys know, those of you who hang out with me in the ArtProf Discord post live streams, sometimes we get in there and we're talking about some like hot topic in the art world. And then 15 minutes later, we're talking about Alice in Wonderland and pizza. So, and that's fine. You know, as long as it stimulates a conversation, that is the most important thing. Kelly is asking about Padlet. Discord is not an option. I have not used Padlet before, so I don't know what the features are, but a lot of the practices that I'm talking about, you can absolutely put them in any platform. So like these ways to stimulate conversations, ways of using emojis, this is all totally stuff you guys can do in any platform. Mystical says that goes the other way too. If my teacher asks for input, I always try to comment on things I've liked. If a teacher comments on liking to see students' faces in video chats, I turn on my cam. Yeah, it's like, as a teacher, you can't just wait for the students to come see you. You have to put yourself out there and see if they'll come. And they won't always respond to what you're saying, but that's okay, all right? Now see, look at this, all right? I just brought up cupcakes. We got four comments in just a few minutes. Neil says, wait, there's National Cupcake Day? I haven't eaten a cupcake in so long. Ronook needs a cupcake. And Blue Will Spirit is recommending cheesecake. Do you guys see how fast that was? Like, I put up one question. It was a really simple one. And then immediately people had something to say. Okay. So the thing about these discussions, it's not about deep conversations. It's just getting the conversation going. Okay. Another thing you can do as well is you can ask the students, hey guys, who saw a picture somewhere this week that you like? Share it in the channel and tell us why. Maybe you saw one of Jordan's character designs and thought, hey, that's really cool. I really like that. Put it in the chat. Maybe you saw a funky movie poster online and you thought, ooh, I really like this. I've never seen the movie, but I really like the image. And maybe you saw a sticker in the art prof shop, of course, and you thought, oh, those characters are really cute. I really like those. Or maybe you were scrolling through an art history page and you stumbled upon the designer, Ava Zeisel, and you really liked her cute little pudgy salt and pepper shakers. And so you can be really specific with the students. You can say it can be anything visual. Does not have to be fine art. Does not have to be a design. It's just any visual thing that you see that you like. Maybe it's a belt you saw. Maybe it's a pair of shoes. Like some picture and explain why. And this does a couple things. First of all, it gets people to share. It gets people to talk about what they like visually. And also you get to know what people like after a while. I think it's, as a teacher, getting to know students and their funny little quirks, that's what I love. I think it's so much fun to see what people enjoy and you get to know them better. So I really recommend doing this. For example, you can ask the students in the social channel, what did you guys watch this week? Chances are everybody in your class watched something. Maybe it was a YouTube video. Maybe it was something on Netflix. Maybe they rented a movie. For example, if I was asked that question, I could say, well, I watched X-Men Days of Future Past because, I really like the cast in that movie. And maybe I watched Jane Eyre a couple times on repeat, multiple nights in a row. Or maybe I watched Sherlock. Or maybe I watched all those things. The point is, you guys, once you start sharing these parts of your life that are not part of the class, it opens up a whole new world, okay? And it's really fun because if I say, for example, I really like X-Men Days of Future Past, chances are there's somebody else who's like, oh my God, I like that movie too. He's so hot. I love him to death. And then I can just, you know, fangirl for the whole day. And so it's fun to connect with people over shows, over YouTube, over whatever it is that you guys are seeing. Put it in the chat and let people see. And also the other cool thing is that by everybody sharing shows and images that they like, it exposes everybody else to new stuff. Like, for example, Keaton is saying, I like Jazza's character design. I don't know who Jazza is. And so maybe if I'm your teacher, I will click on that link and go see what it is. So this is like a total win-win situation, you guys, in terms of sharing what you like in the social channel. Now, here's the reality, okay, about getting to know your students online. Not all your students are going to be 100% on board. Chances are some of them are going to roll their eyes and think, oh, you're such an idiot. You know what? That is the reality of teaching, okay? You're not going to get everybody else on board. But this is my feeling. The bigger picture of all of this, we all have to remember this. I do think that most students will appreciate that you're trying. I think it's pretty obvious when a teacher, maybe they're not that hip, maybe they're not that on top of the technology, but students tell me, can you tell when your teacher has good intentions and is genuinely trying and maybe they're falling on their face a little bit? They especially will be this year because everybody is learning totally new stuff with very little prep time. And I do think most students can say, hey, Miss Johnson, she can't really figure out YouTube, but look at how much she's trying. Look at how much she's working. And so students, I would just say, if there's anything you can do to help your teachers is to be patient with them. Notice that they're trying. I think the biggest bummer, you guys, is when you have a teacher who has clearly given up. Okay, a teacher who's like, I can't be bothered, or is like, I don't want to deal with this. Like that to me, from the student point of view, is very upsetting because it's the biggest bummer in the world. Like, who wants to be taught by a teacher who has given up? And I heard stories like that last spring. Students were really angry. They said, well, this professor totally gave up, did not try, and that was a big bummer. So just show that you're trying. I think that's the most important thing. Blue Wolf Spirit says, yes, it's really cute when teachers try. Yes, exactly. And I do think that as silly as it can feel sometimes from the teacher point of view, it is charming when you guys are sort of stumbling together. And I think that's okay. Also teachers, and this is probably, I would say, especially those of you who teach in academia, this is going to be hard for you to do. It was hard for me to do for a very long time. It took me years of experience here at ArtProf. Teachers, guys are going to have to be a little silly. You're just going to have to. Think about it this way. It's like if you being embarrassed for 30 seconds or longer, if that gets your students to pay attention, to absorb something, isn't that worth it? I think it is. I mean, I'm at the point where I've just taught for so long and I want so much for my students to absorb things that my whole attitude now turning teacher, I'm like, you guys want me to dance? If you will learn this, I will dance for you, okay? Actually, here at Art Prof, the only time I'm gonna dance is if we hit a million subscribers on YouTube, okay? That's gonna be a little while, so that's the only time I'm gonna dance. But my point, you guys, is as a teacher, you gotta let your guard down a little bit here and you have to have silly photos of yourself playing with accordion books and stuff like that. Because online, if you are dead serious all the time, it's not going to be fun for anybody. It's going to be really dry and you're not going to make those connections. I think you can be sort of more serious brick and mortar and it can still be okay. But I think online, it's sort of like being so serious and dry is like 10 times worse. And in real life, it's really hard. This is a good comment from Neil. They're saying when we were in in-person classes, my teacher liked to talk about crushes and matchmaking all the time. My other classmates love it, but it makes me feel uncomfortable. Okay, so here's the thing, guys. There are definitely boundaries. There are things you should never talk to your students about, okay? For example, I think, Neil, this is totally inappropriate. I would never talk to a student about their dating lives, I would never talk to them about that, okay? Now, that doesn't mean that they don't tell me about it, and I'm like, yeah, I really wish I didn't know that about you now. So it's one thing if a student, like, they just tell you, but I would never pry. Like, I would never say to a student, ooh, who are you dating? Like, that's so wrong and inappropriate, okay? So there are definitely topics that you should never talk to your students about. But I think that things that are harmless, like X-Men and Sherlock, like cheesecake, like these are all topics that are totally fine. And I would never put a student in a situation where I would be like trying to coax personal information out of them. No way. Okay. The thing is, though, you need to make a connection and you just have to be very conscious about all those things. Okay. Now let's move on and talk about more ways to be silly. For example, when you've been teaching online, you guys will notice that you start to accumulate like more and more bad screenshots of yourselves. Like, I just must have folders and folders of these. Like, I was actually taking screen caps the other day because I was preparing this other lecture and I needed to get a screen cap from one of my tutorials. So I'm taking the screen cap and I end up with this. And I'm like, okay, that's a good look. Nice. And I thought, okay, this has to be useful somewhere. So what you could do as a teacher, as like a fun little thing, is you can post some funny caption like this and you can say to the students, okay guys, post a caption for this silly picture of me, you know, something like that. This is very harmless and it's really fun. Because you know what I've discovered about YouTube? And I actually think this is sort of true about remote teaching in general, is that YouTube really, when it comes down to it, it's education and entertainment. I think people think about it more as being entertainment, but there's a lot of educational content on YouTube if you're looking for it. And I would say that it's good to educate and it's good to entertain, but if you can do both, that is the sweet spot. Because if people feel that they're learning, but they're also having fun at the same time, that is a win-win situation. And that's really what we've tried to do at Art Prof, is to like lighten up and be silly and have pictures like this of us out there. And it really helps. Now, of course, it really depends on what you're comfortable with. Not every teacher who watches this is going to think this is a good idea. And I'm sure there are going to be some teachers who watch the stream and go, oh, where is your dignity, Clara? You have totally lost it. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, teachers, do whatever you are comfortable with. But I can tell you guys that stuff like this works. It humanizes you as a teacher, because actually one of the teachers wrote to me the other day, and I don't think this is actually that far off. They said, yeah, it's good for students to know that teachers are not flesh-eating monsters. Yep. And so when you see us making faces like this, it really makes a big difference. Butterfly Blue Shorts says, I'm autistic. How do you approach students whose motivations are not typical? I've found distrust from teachers despite achieving highest marks of all in my year since I've graduated. Yeah, that can be really tricky. I mean, usually what I try to do is the first day of class is I will tell students that if they have any situation that they think might affect their performance in the class, for them to tell me privately about it. And I explain that it can be anything. I can say, listen, maybe English is not your first language and you're worried about communicating. Maybe you are just really nervous about remote learning and you just want me to have a little heads up about that, okay? Or maybe, for example, I had a student many years ago who had diabetes and she said, listen, I always have to take my shot at this time. It's in the middle of class. I don't want you to think I'm leaving. I'm just going to take my shot. And so you could, for example, go to that teacher and say, listen, I just want you to know that I'm autistic and these are some things I want you to be aware of. Because again, students, I think that this is a two-way street. And so if you have particular things you're worried about, instead of keeping it to yourself and hoping your teacher figures it out, which they will not, because I never do, tell them. Tell them what you're comfortable with and explain to them, listen, these are some things that would help me. And these are some things I want you to be aware of. Because I actually did have a student many years ago who was autistic, but I did not find out until the last day of class. And I felt terrible about it because I made all these assumptions about that student that were wrong because I didn't know that they were autistic. And so a lot of this comes down to communication. And I know some of it does depend on your school. Like it's really different. Like if you're in high school, things are done differently than if you're in college, because if you're in high school, you're a minor. If you're in college, you're over the age of 18. Everything is very different. So I'm not trying to give blanket advice for every single context. I just think the more people communicate, and again, that's why those one-on-one calls are so important. It's really, really important. Trent has a comment. Yes, remember the Streisand effect. If you try to hide something, people will talk about it more. And Mystical says, I have one teacher from high school I still talk to. She knows everything about me, but I offer all of the information I gave her. She gives advice, but never pushed into my business. Exactly. That's the way it should be. So for example, if a student wants to tell me about something and they're struggling, I will talk to them about it. Okay. If a student is having a hard time and they're like, oh, I don't want to say why, I'm like, that's okay. You just tell me how you feel and you don't have to give me any of the details. That's the tricky thing. You want to have that balance of being open to speaking, but not crossing over those inappropriate boundaries, which I know can be really hard to do. Okay, let's see. Yuko is saying, I've been feeling stressed preparing for the virtual classes. This is helpful. I want it to be fun, light, educational, and entertaining. Yuko, I think that's a great approach because really you can't be so serious all the time. Like it's just going to get depressing, in my opinion. So here's the funny thing, you guys. When you teach art, wow, you end up with a lot of fan art. Like I always like feel bad for math teachers. I'm like, I bet if you teach math, you've probably never had the experience of one of your students drawing you before. Like I've had this happen to me many, many times, obviously because I teach at an art school, but I think this is a hilarious way to interact with your students and it's just so fun. Like for example, on the left, this is one that actually Deep Dee drew of me because I used to tell people that if I was an animal, I'd be a piranha. So that's why she drew me as a piranha. This one in the middle was done by one of my pre-college students. And I guess she said that I was very salty. So that's why I'm holding a salt shaker. And I like burned all the drawings and stuff. And actually the drawing on the lower right, that one was drawn by Lauren Welch, one of the teaching artists here. She did that when she was 18, I believe, in my freshman drawing class at RISD. So fan art is like so funny. The one on the left, some of you guys may have seen before, that was a student who drew me as an otter. I'm like, okay, I don't know why you picked an otter, but it was really funny. The middle one was sort of a running joke because gotta stay clear of me when you're on campus, gotta make sure you know I'm coming. And the one on the right was actually a caricature that Jordan McCracken Foster drew of me back in 2016. And then Victoria Lynn, who was part of the Art Prof staff, she colored it later. It's actually available as a sticker now. You can buy the one in the middle as a sticker too. So anyway, You don't have to turn all your fan art into merchandise like we did here, but come on, you guys, these are so funny, okay? I just get such a kick out of this stuff. So it's totally cool to like encourage this type of stuff. Another thing, guys, okay, here's where I'm sorry, younger people, I still roll my eyes at the memes. I know, it's not a popular opinion. I know you guys love memes. I understand their place, and yes, they're mildly entertaining, but it's not my thing, okay? But I will acknowledge that, number one, students love memes. They can be really fun to find and also to make. And actually, these memes I'm going to show you guys, these were actually made by Mark Steer, who is part of the Art Prof staff over the past half of a year. And so he was actually the official meme maker at Art Prof. And so every single week, Mark would design an Art Prof meme that was based on a recent video. So for example, you have here this one, these two people looking at this painting. It's actually me and Jordan having a crit clash together. So in addition to those silly screen caps and everything, you can post them and be like, okay, guys, make a meme out of this. Again, these are like little actions. All these little things that I'm telling you guys to do, they might feel like nothing, but in my opinion, it all adds up. All these little gestures can make a big difference. So for example, we have a memes channel in the Art Prof Discord, and I have to admit, I really had to be talked into this because, of course, I was that stuffy professor. I said, oh, why do we need a memes channel? And the only way people talked me into it is they said, listen, if you don't have a meme channel, people are going to put memes in all the other channels because they can't help themselves. And then you're going to be annoyed that the other channels are flooded with memes when you actually want them for something more targeted, like a critique or painting techniques or something like that. And so we did that. And I was like, wow, this really works. It's true. Like, all the memes are in one place so the people who want them can see them. And the other channels don't get cluttered with all that stuff. So I really recommend that you guys make a memes channel. It's really, really helpful. Oh my God, I love this. Look at this. Mark is saying, for an art history class, I have a extra credit test question asking students to draw me as an idealized statue. I love how it's not just statue. Idealized statue. I'm noticing the wording there in Mark's statement is very specific. I really like that a lot. See, that's fantastic. It's such a fun way to get things going. For example, this is a meme that Mark Steer made based on my live drawing tutorials, because of course we time those poses and I make these faces. And so that's what Mark did. Actually, this is one of my favorite memes that Mark made, because I know a lot of people are in the Art Prof Discord right now. You guys are doing the 2500 drawing challenge with Jordan, which is something insane, like 500 head drawings and 200 leg drawings. It's just this marathon project. But then Mark says in the meme, but if you're lazy, use our rubber stamp tutorial. And I just thought this was classic. So really great use of that. And then some of you guys saw for the July Art Dare, we had this challenge called Texture Cubes, and Mark turned us into Teacher Cubes. I just love these. They're so funny. And then we also had this other stream that was called Should Artists Work, quote, for the Exposure, which basically means should an artist work for free with no compensation? And a lot of us roll our eyes because it's basically a way of people demanding free work and not wanting to pay people for skills that they deserve to be paid for. So of course, Mark Steer creates this meme about SpongeBob offering exposure and Eloise making this face. So I just love these so much. Another thing, teachers, that I think we do need to pump up more so when you teach remotely is showing empathy and also vulnerability. And again, this is one of those places where it does get a little bit dicey, because the thing is, if you are too empathic and you show too much vulnerability, that can sometimes make it so students lose their confidence in your ability as a teacher. And I know, especially if you're a younger teacher, because I was definitely a younger teacher at one point, I can understand the hesitancy to want to do that because you are trying to exert your authority. So this is a really tricky one. But I would say that to some degree, you need to show this online because, again, like I said, everybody is struggling right now, teachers and students adjusting to such an extraordinary situation. I want to say thank you to Dreamy Lizard for the super chat. Really appreciate your support. As you guys know, ArtProf is 100% free and we rely entirely on donations. So thank you so much for that. So how do you do this? You just say crap 80 times during your live stream. I do think during demos, you guys, it actually is helpful not to do it perfectly. Because actually, one of the funniest moments that I had watching a teacher do a demo, I had this teacher when I was in art school who was so refined and calm and so knowledgeable, and they were doing this printmaking demo and something went wrong. And I remember crystal clear, they said, "Oh my God, it's the scraper bar." I shouldn't be laughing because they messed up the demo really bad. Like something went wrong with the scraper bar. And all of us just went, "Oh my God," it was just so charming, like to watch him mess up. And so you shouldn't mess up all the time, but it's okay, teachers, to show that, you know, you're not perfect. You make crappy drawings too, and you're not always happy with your work. I think it does not come across well when teachers act like they're these omnipotent artists, because nobody is. That's just not real. It's not human. And so it's okay as a teacher, you guys, show your flaws, say crap, okay? Yeah, like it can be a game. Lisa's gonna get a crap counter because, you know, I say that word a couple times during some of the drawing streams. So it's okay, you guys, to show students that not everything you do is perfect. I think people need to see that. They need to see the reality. Okay, it's also really great to have a space in the group chat that is made specifically for students to provide tech feedback to the teacher. For example, chances are if your teacher is using Discord, they may not know it that well. And maybe some of the students have been using Discord forever and ever, and they know all the inside shortcuts and stuff like that. But the thing is, teachers, if the students know something that you don't know, they're not gonna tell you. Here's why. Because if I were a student and I saw my teacher and I thought, "Oh my God, there's a much better way to do that. I really wish they knew about this function," I probably wouldn't say anything. Because if I go to the teacher and I say, "Hey, did you know there's a better way to do..." I could totally feel as a student that, oh no, they're gonna think I'm criticizing them, they're not gonna like me, and therefore my grade is gonna go down, okay? There are so many students who said that to me last semester. They said, "Listen, this teacher, there were all these things they did not know about how to do in this platform, but I didn't say anything because I was worried it was gonna come across as me being really harsh and being really critical," okay? So what you do instead, you set up a space that is particularly for tech feedback, okay? So if I'm a student and I realize, oh, my teacher doesn't know about this one feature in Discord, I can go in there and say, "Oh, by the way, there's this feature in Discord. It helps you do this, this, and this." So what this channel does, it's basically inviting the students to give you feedback. And again, this is another way to show that you're trying, that you want their help, that you're not just assuming you know everything better just because you're the teacher. I mean, a lot of times we don't know better, especially when it comes to these platforms. So I think really helpful, make a space like this for the students so they feel comfortable offering help. You guys are gonna want the help, okay? You're not gonna wanna turn down some suggestion a student can make to make your life a lot better. Ra Nook is saying, "I love seeing that Prof. Lu makes mistakes while making art. That makes me realize, sheesh, human, oh, she is human too, and I can practice and become better." It's relatable. You know, it's like when you see people on TV who are super rich and well off, and you're like, "Great, I can't relate to that." People want to feel when they're students that they can relate to their teachers. And part of that is showing vulnerability and showing that you're not perfect. And Ronuk is adding, "I love when you make mistakes during draw alongs and correct them. Makes me feel like you're human too. Maybe I can also get better if I practiced." Yeah, and seeing people mess up and then seeing how that gets fixed, that's even more important because it really bothers me. You guys ever watch these tutorials where just every single thing they do in the tutorial is perfect. And then you do it and it's not like that. Like, actually, the thing that really bothers me, you guys, you ever go to make a recipe and there's like a picture of the cupcakes and you're like, oh, I want to make those cupcakes, right? And then you make it and it looks nothing like the picture. Like, I get actively angry. Like, the best recipe books to me are the ones that make something tasty and don't mislead me that I'm going to make this incredible, like, five-star Michelin restaurant pastry dessert. Like, it actually just shows you what it actually looks like. So I think that's really important. And Blue Wolf Spirit says, when teachers make mistakes, the students are more likely to give you more leeway and respect since they can identify with another human rather than an art god slash goddess. Yeah, who wants to be taught by an art goddess? That's really annoying. I would not want to do that. So you can ask them too, like sometimes in the Discord server, maybe there's a specific channel topic. Maybe there is something else, like you can use playlists. Like, guys, I'm not joking. A lot of teachers are going to need your help, okay? I had to explain to a couple of teachers the other day, listen, YouTube playlists are fabulous. You can do this, this, and this. A lot of teachers don't know about that. So you're going to want to tell them, and making that space is very, very helpful. Okay, let's talk about this idea of an art hangout. This is sort of like office hours, but it's not like office hours in that it's way more casual and it's not one-on-one. It's sort of like you come in, hang out, you leave, people are coming and going type of thing, okay? In fact, we had an art hangout, the art prof staff, a couple days ago, because actually we realized, we're like, you know, we never really get to do that because when we have a staff call, we're so busy talking about art prof stuff that we never have time for all these silly conversations. So we had this art hangout for a few hours. It was so much fun. We had such a great time. And so teachers, what you can do, let's say maybe once a week, you can say, okay, on Wednesdays for these 2 hours, this is the art hangout. We're just going to be in the voice channel and you can be on video, you can be on audio, whatever you guys want. And it's just time to do whatever. I did this with my RISD class in the spring. We never talked about anything serious. Most of the time we were talking about hot white men. I mean, that was sort of my fault, just a little bit. But the point is, these art hangouts, I think they're a casual space. It's like, again, I think a big part about remote teaching, you have to create a space for an interaction. Because if you don't make that online space, that interaction will not happen. And so you have to make these online spaces. David is saying it's about showing students that the whole teacher-student thing is going to be a horizontal relationship, like we are all equal in a way. Yes, this is very different, I think, than brick and mortar. Because in brick and mortar, there's so many things that you can just intuitively do because you're in person. But online, you can't do that. Like here, you really need to have a social channel. Like if I want to say something silly about cupcakes, I don't have to be like, oh, I need to set up a social channel to do that. Like in brick and mortar, I just talk about cheesecake. It's like not a problem. But online, you have to have that space that's actually set up. Butterfly Blue Shorts says, how do you feel about responsibility towards more sensitive or younger students regarding criticism, making sure you do not break their self-esteem? So many students never practice out of school. Yeah, this is a big, big challenge. And I know that it's something that a lot of teachers are very concerned with and don't always know exactly what to do. And again, every student is unique. And so just because something worked with one student, it doesn't always mean it's going to work with somebody else. I mean, what I typically try to do is I try to make sure students know that I know that they're there. Because I know from what I've talked to a lot of students about, is some students say things to me like, you know what? That professor, they don't even know what my name is. And I know for a lot of students, once they realize that their professor has not taken the time to learn their name, they're done with that professor. I mean, that's such a, it feels like a, it's not a minor thing, okay? Teachers, you got to know their names and you got to know their nicknames. You got to know how to say it correctly or at least show that you're trying to say it correctly. And I've also had things like, for example, I've had students say to me, you know what, this teacher never bothered to find out what my pronouns were. This teacher always confused me with this other girl just because we both had black hair. And things like that are not cool, you guys, okay? As teachers, we need to do better than that. And I definitely have had students where I'll mess up their pronoun and I'll say to them, listen, correct me, please. I'm so sorry. I'll apologize. Or I'll try to say their name. I'll totally mess it up. And then they'll correct me. And so I think as long as, again, it's like you got to show that you're trying and that you notice that somebody's there. And then if you still are not getting through to them, sometimes what I will do with a student is I'll say, hey, listen, can we just have a check-in? Just want to see what's going on. And so reaching out to a student like that is really important. Now, it's hard because sometimes if you have 80 students in a semester, that can be really, really hard to do. So it's definitely a balance, but I think just paying attention to those things really, really makes a difference. I know that students really care about stuff like that and really fessing up when you screw up, which you're going to screw up. I mean, I do it all the time. So as long as you are admitting that you mess up, that's the most important thing. Mystical says, a lot of my teachers use Slack instead of Discord. It's very similar for the person that was talking about alternatives. You know, it's good you brought up Slack because I have not talked about Slack very much. And actually, we use Slack for the art prof staff. That's where we do all of our art prof business stuff. But I'm not a fan of using it for a classroom. And here's why, okay? Slack, in my opinion, first of all, most students have never used Slack. Slack really is not a social platform at all. It really is a platform that people only use if they've had an office job, they've worked at a corporation. Like Discord is different. Like a lot of students have used Discord for gaming or fandom or something like that. So Discord does have like a social side. Like I don't know anybody who has a Slack account for a bunch of their friends. Like that's really different. I mean, maybe people do, and I just don't know about it, but I really associate Slack with like an office position. And some people say, well, but then I want to train them to use Slack. So when they get out of school and they have a job, they know how to use it. And I'm going, yeah, but you know what? By the time these students are out in the job market, it's going to be something else. So that's my reasoning for not using Slack. I mean, it is similar to Discord, but that for me is the more compelling reason is that most students have never used Slack. I have Slack for art prof and I have hired college students and high school students and not a single one of them has ever said to me, oh yeah, I've used Slack. Never. They're all like never used it before. So I think Discord is a lot better. WC says, I visited a professor many times during her office hours and like twice, she said, I have no idea who you are. Yeah, I wouldn't say it like that to a student. Like, okay, so this has totally happened to me, you guys. I confess. I have had students run into me on the RISD campus in person and go, hey, Clara. And I'm like, I don't know who you are. Like, I don't say that out loud, but I literally like cannot recognize them. Okay. This is because I've been teaching for so long. I remember people for the semester, okay? If you're in my class right now, I will remember you, okay? But after that, there are no guarantees that I will remember you. And so usually if I'm just walking down the street, I'll just wave hello. But if somebody actually like has a conversation with me and they're like, oh, remember this? And I really have no idea. I just admit, I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm an idiot. I'm getting old. I can't remember who anybody is. Please remind me who you are and what class. I think it's just, you have to be honest. Like you can't like pretend that you know who somebody is. And I will say to you, I confess, I don't know. So just tell me. I think that's the most important thing. Let's see what else people are saying. Mystical says, I'd rather use Discord than Slack, honestly, so I see where you're coming from. And Blue Wolf Spirit says, I found Slack to be more oriented towards developers like IT people. Yeah, usually it's like a job thing. It's not a socialized situation. And then also, if you guys decide you do want to have an art hangout, let's say in a voice channel in Discord, I would also have like office hours, an accompanying text channel where people can post images and links. So if you're discussing something, oh, hey, check this out, you can put it in there because obviously you can't do that in a voice channel. And again, if you guys need tips, teachers on Discord, watch this stream. Let's talk about icebreakers. I know that this is especially compelling for teachers right now because in the spring, a lot of us had the students for a couple weeks in person and then we went remote. And so in some ways, not that that was easy, but it was easier than in the fall when you're getting brand new students. You never met them in person. And so these icebreakers, they might feel a little bit silly, but I think in some ways they're much more important now than they ever have been before. So here's one thing that I would consider. I know a lot of teachers are doing breakout rooms in Zoom or whatever platform you're using, and these can work. But in my opinion, breakout rooms are a lot more effective when students are given a very specific task and they have to come up with visible results, okay? What I don't think works in breakout rooms, and students, correct me if I'm wrong, okay? Tell me what you guys think about breakout rooms because I'm curious. The breakout rooms that I found students did not like are when teachers said, okay, everybody go into a breakout room with these students and discuss this. If you just give them a topic of discussion, students told me they didn't do it. They were like, yeah, we just gossip for a half an hour. Like, that's not good. You can't trust them to do that. I mean, of course, as a teacher, you might go around to the different breakout rooms and they'll talk about it when you're there. But if you're just saying, talk about this, I don't think that's very helpful. So I think it's a lot better when you require them to say, okay, by the time you're done, you should have this. So let me show you guys what I'm talking about. Because the thing about breakout rooms that a student explained to me that I thought made so much sense that never even occurred to me is that when you have remote learning, a lot of students don't get a lot of time together outside of class. Usually what people do is they have their friend groups, they hang out with their friend groups, but those peer-to-peer relationships, the people who aren't like your personal friends, but you get along with them and you're in the same class, those interactions can disappear if you don't have breakout rooms. And I know that when I was in art school, I definitely had people, I was not like friends with them. Like I would never go out to dinner and have a movie with them, but I would totally talk to them in class and have a good time. So breakout rooms, that is your opportunity for those student-to-student interactions to actually happen. Yuko is asking, during class, when you have one-on-one critiques, what do you ask the other students to do while they wait? Do you put them in small groups? Usually if I do one-on-one critiques, I schedule those by appointment so I don't have the rest of the class waiting around. Because again, it's like, why would you make 20 people wait just so you can talk to one student? So usually I try to make the schedule so I don't have to do that. Otherwise, it's a big hassle. WC is saying, I find breakout rooms awkward. And Blue Wolf Spirit says, I think they stink. And WC also says, I've had breakout rooms where certain people help facilitate the conversation and those were nice. And Mystical says, a lot of my teachers did written paragraph icebreakers, but no one actually read them and breakout rooms just seemed awkward. Yeah, so that's why I'm gonna say, you guys, it's much better to have like a task that people are doing together where you get results. Like for example, this is a really fun icebreaker that I did with some of my high school students a couple of years ago. So it's basically this assignment. We call them cartoon selfies, okay? And we have a video on this starring Casey Rudin. This is an older tutorial that we did. And basically what we say to the students is, okay, everybody draw yourself as a cartoon many, many times. And then you post them afterwards. And maybe in the breakout room, you draw one, take a picture and share it, okay? So that way there's some structure because I agree, it's really awkward when like you're in a room with four people and it's like, yeah, talk. And you're like, about what? This is like really, really awkward. And so this is really fun because what I like about this cartoon selfie is that first of all, it's a cartoon. So nobody has to feel like, oh, it needs to look real. Second of all, you do learn things about people by looking at their cartoon selfies. Like usually people will draw themselves doing something or wearing a certain outfit, or maybe there's a particular expression. And so usually when I've done this assignment, after people do their cartoons, we show them to each other and you explain, oh yeah, I drew myself doing this because this is something I do a lot. I drew myself wearing this green hoodie because it's my favorite outfit. And so it's a really nice way to get everything moving without people having that like awkward moment of needing to start a conversation. Jody is asking, are you suggesting breakout rooms in Zoom Or is there that option in Discord, like a live chat? You totally could. Yeah, in Discord, what you probably could do is make a category that's like multiple breakout rooms. So you could say, this text channel is breakout room number one. This is breakout room number two. I mean, you can organize the channels however you want. I guess people use breakout room as a phrase because that's usually what people are using in Zoom. But yeah, you could absolutely do the same thing in Discord or any other platform that you're talking about. Tia has a comment. Please don't put us in random breakout rooms. We miss our friends. Yeah, it's tricky, Tia, because the thing is, if you just put people in breakout rooms with their friends, they won't have any reason to interact with people who maybe they don't socialize with. And so I think that's where I say if you have a task, it's less awkward. You don't have those like silences where nobody really knows what to do. So here's another one that I really, really like, because who doesn't like food? Of course, it's all about food. And so what I will say to students is, okay, let's say on Tuesday, we're gonna do this illustration assignment. Everybody think of a dish that you really like. Maybe it's a dish that your family members make, maybe it's something that you like to make, anything. Does not have to be that formal. It could be just a dish that you whip up out of your head. It could be peanut butter and jelly. Does not have to be anything that fancy. And so what I say to the students is you visualize how to make that dish. And it can be step by step. It can be very free flow, because you know something? Who doesn't like to talk about food? And number two, you learn stuff about people. Like I did this project a couple of years ago with some of my high school students, and a lot of them had family in Portugal. And so I learned about all these like Portuguese dishes that I'd never heard about. And they were so happy to like tell me about the dish and how it was made and why they liked it so much. And so this is sort of similar, I think, to the cartoon selfies, in that you learn things about people without them having to like tell you, because it's so awkward when people are like, what's your favorite jacket? What's your favorite show? Like people don't want to be grilled. So if you just say to them, what is a dish you like? Make a picture of it, show it in the Discord, and maybe tell us in the voice channel why you chose to do that dish. It's like an indirect way of getting people to talk about themselves without putting them so much on the spot. Tia says, as much as we hate it as students, having cameras on the semester has improved participation so much. Yeah, I think that if that's working for you teachers, then do it. I think it really depends on the age group and also the type of class you're teaching, how big it is and everything. I tend to not like to put pressure on students, but you know, whatever works for your situation. So it can be something like this, like you don't need anything labeled. You can just make a drawing of like a floating pepper shaker that's like going into a frying pan. And it's like, you get so many like hilarious illustrations of this. So this I have found to be just a really fun, easy assignment. You can do it with any art supplies and people love talking about this. Okay, let's talk about group drawing exercises, because nothing is more fun than getting to draw together as a group. And so one thing that we did actually for an art dare a couple months ago was we told people to watch a TV show or a movie and draw from the screen. Guys, those of you who did that art dare, tell everybody else how much fun we had with this art dare. This was just the coolest thing. And so I do have this video where I actually decided to draw from the Twilight Zone. And so we picked one episode. It's this episode called The Masks. It's got really cool visuals. If you haven't seen this episode, look it up. It's pretty short. But so everybody gets that episode and then we watch it. And I did this draw along tutorial where I demonstrated how to draw with ink. But you could totally do this with the whole class. If everybody is live in Discord, you guys all draw from the movie or the TV show together. And then you go into Discord and everybody posts their sketches. It's super, super fun, guys. Like, who doesn't like doing this? This is just so, so cool. Sylvia is asking, can you bring Discord into Schoology? I have never used Schoology before, so I don't know technically how that works. So I think I would have to look into that. My guess is probably not. It's probably like other platforms where it's its own thing. And let's see, over here, you can see everybody's reaction to the movie and the TV show is totally different. I mean, so, so fun, you guys. And so then again, in the Discord, you upload, you show everybody what you did, and you have a great time. This is another art dare that we did. I got to admit, I'm recycling some of our stuff, but hey, some of you may have never heard of this before, okay? You can do gesture drawings from animal videos because obviously people aren't living with a lion. I hope you're not, at least, that you can draw from life. And so what I say to people is just go on YouTube, find an animal video. There's millions of them. By the way, there's a baby panda born the other day at the National Zoo. Isn't that cool? So whatever animal video you can find, do these quick gesture drawings. It's a really good gesture drawing exercise. And you can draw whatever you want. You can pick a cat. You can do a kangaroo. And we got you guys covered because we also have this cat drawing tutorial, which shows you how to do this. And what's fun about this too is that because it's a video and the animals are moving, people don't have expectations the drawing has to look amazing. Like, I love this page of quick gesture drawings by Lauren Welch, one of the teaching artists here. And honestly, some of my favorite sketches that she did were the ones that are less detailed. Like, do you guys see the one in the very middle, second from the right? That one has very little detail. And yet I feel like that one has more movement than some of the other ones. And so this is a really fun activity. And it's the same thing. You go into Discord, you post the stuff, you see what everybody's doing. All this like live group drawing, you're in it together. It's as close as you can get, I think, into getting all this stuff going on. Okay, let's go over a couple of art games because I know a lot of teachers are asking for different types of games that they can do. So there's some two-person games that I think are really helpful. And again, this can be done in a breakout room, like maybe you have six students in a breakout room and people are doing this together. So this is a really fun one. It's to make a collaborative comic. This is hilarious. Like, this is such a great game to play. I got this from Casey Roonan. He put together these images for me. And this is really fun because basically what you do is you pair up with another student. And so student one draws panel one. Student two also draws panel one, okay? And this is the type of art game, like, you're just getting up cracking up. Like, you're gonna just be in total stitches. And then what you do is you switch. I mean, in real life, that's what you would do. In Discord, probably what you would do, you'd take a photo of your first panel, you'd post it, and then the other student would look at your first panel, and then they would create panel two in reaction to what the other student made. So you're just going back and forth. You do a panel, your partner does a panel, you do the next one, your partner does the next one. And it just creates these really hilarious stories that go really crazy and into all these funny places. You cannot do this project and not have a good time. It's really, really fun. And again, post the results in the group chat. It can get a little bit complicated online because you do have to stitch together the panels. And so whoever has the ability to do that, that does make it a little bit easier to figure out what image goes where. And then these are also really fun blind contour portraits. If you pair up with somebody and you're drawing them on video, it's awkward at first, but it's kind of hilarious. And you sort of can't have a good time doing this because blind contours are just so weird looking. You sort of have to laugh. And so usually what we do, you can do this on video, you partner up, again, in a breakout room, maybe six students per breakout room. And then you just try to draw each other and you're probably gonna crack up and it's gonna be awkward and weird. And then you end up with these weird, weird drawings. And again, no pressure for them to look amazing because everybody knows that they're blind contour. So this is another really cool game. And then posting the results in the group chat. That's the best part of all this stuff, you guys. Just seeing the images pour into the Discord and seeing what everybody made from the exercise. Now, here's a really fun game that the whole class can do that we have done here at Art Prof in the past. And that is this game, we call it, Is It From a Photo? we have so much fun doing these streams. And so I have to imagine that if you're a teacher, this would be really fun too. This probably is better high school and above. I think middle school, it might not be such a good fit, but who knows? I mean, it depends on your students. It depends on the class. So basically, we show a picture of an artwork and you say to the students, and you can do this in a group chat or in a voice channel, you can say, do you guys think this drawing is from a photo? And you ask the students to say why. Well, why? What makes you think this is drawn from a photo? What makes you think this is drawn from life? And then what you do is you have the reveal and you show the incriminating photo, which demonstrates if it was actually drawn from life or if it's actually done from a photo. And these streams are so much fun because people sometimes disagree and then you can explain why. And so we have a blast doing these. And sometimes they're famous images. Like this one is actually, this is a colored pencil drawing that I did. But this one, if you don't know, this is a very famous painting. It's called The Problem We All Live With, and it's by Norman Rockwell. And I have to tell you guys, I knew this painting for a long time before I ever knew the types of photo references that Norman Rockwell shot. And so this might even be a game with artwork that you know about. You've seen the image, but maybe you don't know anything about how it was made. And so I really enjoy this a lot. And so we have two of these streams that you guys can use. And you guys are very lucky because last night I spent all this time putting together and updating the section. So I actually have a new section on the Art Prof game show. And so if you go to this page, what you're going to see is a page that looks like this. It says, is this from a photo? You can click the link and you can watch the video segment where we actually talk as a staff what we think. And then when you're ready to show the answer to the students, you click that red button that says see answer, and then a new page pops up with the answer. So teachers, you can totally use this page. You don't have to format any of the images or anything. Just use our website and then you can do the reveal when you guys press that see answer button. Butterfly Shorts says, how do you find the state of video art and its representation in traditional media, considering TikTok and the evolution of the media? Oh, wow, that's a stream that's gonna have to come after this one at some point, because that's a big, big question. I think it's a great topic, but I don't think we're gonna have time to get into that, okay? And if you wanna see a game show stream in action, we actually have one scheduled for this week with me and Kat and Deep D. So we hope you guys will tune into that because we haven't had one of these streams for a while. And it's just a really fun guessing game. You learn so much about the work. It's really, really cool. So teachers, if you have not had an opportunity to look at artprof.org, we do have this new section, Teaching and Learning Art Online, which I just recently updated. It's quite different than it has been lately. So we have the main page. Scroll down and you will find these images at the bottom, which show you all the various sections. There's stuff about equipment, teachers, home art supplies, games, Discord, tips, critiques, prompts. We have everything here for you guys. Yuko has a question. One of my students doesn't like technology. She has a hard time doing things like creating PDF files. She's really upset that things are online. Have any tips on how I can help her? I think I would just make sure that you either have a handout that says step-by-step how to do something, or that you are willing to have a one-on-one with her to maybe walk through some of those things. And I would also say there are certain things online that are easier to do than others. Like, for example, somebody actually emailed me a PDF form the other day. I had to fill it out because I did a lecture and I had to give them information. I cannot tell you guys how much it irritates me to death when people send me a PDF to fill out and I can't fill it out. That drives me insane. And so you have to make sure that your tech is really working. Like if I want students to fill out a form, I will always give them a Google form. A Google form is so much better than filling out a PDF. The PDFs are so glitchy when it comes to filling them out, okay? Now creating a PDF file, that's different. That's not remotely as hard as filling one out. But I would just say, think through how you can get that student to do things and find the easiest, most straightforward way. Because sometimes teachers ask students to do things in an unnecessarily complicated manner. And I'm like, why are we doing this? Just fill out the form. Like, it would be so much easier this way. And if you don't know, ask other teachers. You can ask us in the Discord, hey, I want the students to do this. What is the best platform? What is the best document format? There are some documents that are such a pain. Like PDFs are not, I'm not a fan of PDFs. I feel like they're such a hassle. They're not easy to deal with. Okay. So you guys remember we have streams almost every night here on YouTube. And this is my new general practices for teaching online, regardless of what platforms you guys are using. I would use this video as a reference for all the information that I'm putting out there, because I had a video in March that is now like totally out of date because everything is so different here. And I want people to have the most recent information, because what I've been doing is really paying attention to what teachers need, what people are asking for. Like this is a stream I did the other day on how to live stream an art demo on YouTube. So I'm trying to keep things as up to date as possible. Mystical says, my math teacher gives us PDFs of our tests that are so annoying to edit. And Blue Will Spirit says, people use PDFs because only certain parts can be altered. It has control over the content. Yeah, I know PDFs have their place, for sure. There are certain times when I think you should. It's just so much of the time, I feel like the people who are giving you the PDF to fill out have not looked at, can you actually fill it out? Like, I've been given so many PDFs where I'm like, there's no edit option here, guys. Like, this is not going to work. And thank you so much, Butterfly Blue Shorts, for the super chat. We really appreciate having your support here at ArtProf. And remember, many other streams about remote learning, interviews from students. ArtProf has a podcast. It's available on Spotify and also on iTunes. Please leave us a rating and a review. And please join me on Discord in a few minutes. I will be over in the ArtProf Discord. We will be hanging out in the post live streams channel. The invite link is in the video description below. We have a quick question from Sylvia. Do you have a video? How to set up my streaming equipment to begin streaming? I do. If you go to teaching and learning online on artprof.org, you want to click on equipment and software, and that will take you exactly to that video. And please subscribe to the YouTube channel here at ArtProf. Join the ArtProf family. And thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters for providing what we need to keep ArtProf up and running. Thank you to all the teachers, all the students in the chat. You guys are helping me so much by giving a diverse range of opinions and ideas. So, so helpful in all of this. Everybody, I will see you next time. Bye-bye.